Off the Ball.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Wednesday's Off the Ball. We've got a very nice...
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Wednesday's Off the Ball. It's Joe here. We've got a very nice show for you this evening. Coming up tonight, Paul O'Connell, Brian O'Driscoll and Alan Quinlan, as recorded in front of a live audience at the Olympia last night, is coming your way this evening. Also this evening, Matt Williams live, talking on Wednesday Night Rugby, and then Stephanie Roach on the move to Florence, which is pretty interesting. So for Stephanie, straight after 9 o'clock on the football show, followed by Tim Vickery, looking ahead to Brazil-Uruguay with a nod back to 1950, which Brazil are still not quite over. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball. Ronan Mullen is here. Richie McCormick is here. How are we doing, lads?
Welcome back, Joe.
Thanks very much. It's a shorter than usual news round this evening, Richie. You're going to have to be extra brief and efficient with your word count because we have to make room for Messrs. O'Connell. Quinlan.
Get the names right, Joe, if you're going to squeeze me out for them.
And O'Driscoll. Yes.
I'm going to be extra courteous tonight, don't worry.
We had a great night at the Olympia last night, I must say. The Olympia is an extraordinary venue. Of all the venues that we are lucky enough to ever get to do, the Olympia is so amazing because the acoustics are just phenomenal. And the thing that strikes you when you're on the stage, as opposed to when you're in the crowd, is how small and intimate it feels. When you're in the crowd, it can feel pretty big.
It does, yeah.
Because it's so high, and often, I mean, you're often in the cheap seats. We've all been that soldier up top, and it does feel very big. But actually, when you're on the stage, it feels much, much smaller and on top of you because it's so steep. So
and
it's
it goes
like
up. It goes up high so quickly. Like the balcony is just right there.
Oh, true, totally. So like the person in the back row at the ground floor, you could talk to without a microphone, and so the whole thing just almost seems to go straight up. You feel like the people on the very top are hanging over you almost, you know. And then you've got obviously everybody at the side. It's just the most amazing venue.
All right, Joe. They weren't all there to see you last night. Calm down.
Literally nobody was there to see me. Don't worry. And well, we had a moment actually at one stage where somebody in the interval was kind of giving a give a cheer for this person, give a cheer for that person. So they started with Alan Quinlan.
It's Adrian Barry doing this.
Got a man. No, he wasn't there. Massive cheer for Quinlan, and then it was next. It was Keith Wood, and then Justin Marshall. Way, and there's a bit of a rhythm to it now. And then it's Paul O'Connell. Way, and then it's Brian O'Driscoll. Way, and then they get to me. Ooh. Proper booing.
Good.
Yeah, that was nice. Much appreciated.
Keeping you honest.
Was it pantomime or did you take it personally?
Took it personally initially and then...
No, he's definitely still taking it personally.
And got over it. Still not talking about it 24 hours later on the radio or anything. No, but it was great stuff. So the plan is to play you some of the chat between O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll and Quinlan this evening, and then tomorrow, Justin Marshall. It was really good.
I was actually more... Because we've had, you know, without wanting to sound like we're more jaded by this stage, we've had O'Connell, we've had Brian, we've had Keith and all that, but what's Marshall like? Because we don't necessarily get an insight into the All Blacks all that often.
Funny.
Yeah?
Yeah. 81 appearances for New Zealand, 24 tries in his 81 appearances, which is quite something.
Not bad.
He walked out on stage and threw a signed Justin Marshall rugby ball into the crowd.
On brand. I was going to say that's a baller move, but there we go.
Yeah. So he was good, and he was good on lots of things, like even the haka. It was very interesting because it came up at one stage. Obviously, I was curious because we always talk about the haka from our vantage point. So what are they thinking during the haka? And he was thinking a lot of the time, not to misrepresent him because he was talking about how important it is and the respect he has for it and everything, but he said, I was rubbish at doing it. I just didn't look intimidating doing the haka, so I tried to stand at the back where no one could see me.
You'd imagine for some, because it is a big thing.
Yeah.
That if you haven't got the moves or the rhythm for it or even the intimidating nature about you, it can be an awkward couple of minutes.
For sure. And there was an interesting moment where we were talking to O'Driscoll about how you handle it, and he was saying, you know, there's various things you can do, and one of the things you should try and control is when the haka finishes to almost take the sting out of it by really taking your time to take off your track suits and go over to the sideline and really slow down the mood and extenuate the amount of time between the haka finishing and the game kicking off. You know, take the sting out of the whole thing.
Let their blood go down a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then I said to Justin Marshall, what's the best thing the opposition can do to counteract the haka? And he said, oh, kick off straight away. And I kind of laughed, thinking he was being sarcastic because O'Driscoll had just given that answer. And he said, no, seriously, kick off straight away. We're all a bit wrecked after doing it. It's emotionally draining. He said, watch, if you're at the game on Saturday, he said, watch what the New Zealand team will do after the haka. They'll go and regroup and they'll have a little drink. And they actually want a few seconds after the haka. It turns out. So, you know, we had it completely wrong.
It's such a weird thing that nobody in the span that it's been performed, for want of a better term, on the international stage, that nobody has come up with a definitive way to responding to it. Like, the one that always sticks out for me is Wales from about a decade back at this stage, where they just all stood in the line straight afterwards and didn't move after the haka, which only served to, I'd imagine, keep the blood up from a New Zealand point of view, because they were just staring there and going, all right, we're well up for this challenge now. And Wales are kind of half thinking, do we move, do we not, do we move, do we not? Waiting for Alwyn Jones is going to give them the nod. And they didn't, and it took a while, and it took the referee to calm things down and get everybody moving to one side. But like, what is the response to that?
I don't know, really. It seems like
such an outmoded thing, like, on the surface, this idea of doing a pre-match ritual, but there's people, non-rugby fans, who, if they're walking past the TV and they say, oh wait, the haka's on, and they'll stop and watch it. So it's kind of synonymous with rugby in that sense.
It's iconic, really.
Yeah.
And it's the one game you're guaranteed everybody will be in the stadium 10 minutes before.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, but Justin Marshall with Keith Wood and the lads is going out tomorrow night. And then obviously we'll podcast the whole thing. It's well worth the listen. It's really good. Even if you don't get around to it before the New Zealand game, it's mostly timeless. Like, O'Connell's very funny. You'll hear a good chunk of O'Connell this evening about how he's trying to learn French. And it's just...
There's something about Munster around it. Because the thing about French is, when you learn German to a degree, and I know this from experience somewhat, the accent comes with just the functionality of the words. Like, the way the words are formed essentially forms your accent. Whereas with French, you actually have to put on an accent while also speaking the words that are in front of you. You don't just get away with going, je suis...
Well, I asked him how his accent is.
Irlandais.
He said, not good. He's listening to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in French. That's his current listening, which is just fantastic. He was in great form. Having Quinlan there was fantastic, because Quinlan straight away, right off the bat, just started needling him. Like, remember you did this? Remember you said that? I mean, effectively, the first 10 minutes is, why is Paul O'Connell such a weirdo? That's kind of what you're getting into in about 15 minutes time or so. Lads, is there anything worse than seeing a non-New Zealand club side, or worse, a group of guys on a stag doing the haka? That's an instant punchable offence, is Sarah in Portlaoise. Don't think I've seen that too much, actually.
Although I would agree with Sarah that they should be punched.
No, that is true. And then there's a few people wondering, should Ireland do a few rounds of river dance after the All Blacks do the haka?
No, that would be disrespectful.
That would not be a good move. The one memory or point Justin Marshall brought up was when when Wales objected or said they weren't doing the haka in Cardiff. And so New Zealand did it in the dressing room, and it was filmed on BBC cameras in the dressing room. I think Wales were 50 points down at halftime. I think don't make a thing out of it is best advice. Do nothing to provoke them. Don't give them anything to hang up on the back of the dressing room door.
Sound like you're facing down an Alsatian. It's the neighbour's dog is slightly more feral than others.
If you don't move, they can't see you. That's the rule with haka.
But even the way Brian O'Driscoll dealt with it in 05, obviously it's gone down in infamy now, but that was nearly the narrative for the entire week after that match. Was like, oh, what did he mean by it? And he had to come out at the worst possible time, suffering with that injury, and try and clear up what he intended by it. It's just, oftentimes it's just get on with it. Ignore the preamble and just, it's just treated as part of the game.
So. Totally. I mean, the irony of 05 being they were doing what they thought was absolutely the best and most appropriate way to respond to haka, and then it gets turned around, and it's just messy territory.
That was the most micromanaged tour ever, probably. Attention to detail was, not a miss at all, and they apparently consulted different people to get the best possible way, as you said there, and it just backfired entirely.
It did, yeah. The Tana Umaga situation comes up as well. We'll probably play that out tomorrow, but there was a nice moment where Justin Marshall said, you probably don't remember this, but I came over to you on the stretcher to say, I hope you're okay, and O'Driscoll said, no, I do remember that. But that's tomorrow, and you can podcast the full thing. I'll stop giving away bits and bobs of it now.
Spoiler alert,
kind of gives away the flow of the conversation. The news round this evening is brought to you with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. And you're giving us the latest on Republic of Ireland situation.
Yeah, Matt Doherty ruled out of this week's games for the Republic of Ireland as the Wales wing back suffered a facial injury in the club's draw with Arsenal last weekend. Manager Martin O'Neill says Doherty's absence may see Ireland revert to a four-man defence. Something Keith Andrews on this very show last night was dead set against. Meanwhile, Michael Obafemi will not be playing a competitive international for the Republic of Ireland this week. The 18-year-old trained with the squad, but the Dublin-born Southampton striker also qualifies for both England and Nigeria, and a cap in the Nations League game away to Denmark on Monday would tether Obafemi to Ireland, but O'Neill suggests he's not ready for such a commitment.
I haven't spoken to his parents, but I have spoken to him, and I think that he's enjoyed the training. It's been really good. He's done very well as well, too. I think Glenn would agree with me. very well in the training. He settled in nicely. I think he's really enjoyed it. But I think in terms of decisions for tying him down, I think that's a bit of a distance off. You know, I think he has got things to think about like everything else, and I certainly would not be rushing him. And that was my point to him, you know. So, yeah, as I said to you, I think a couple of days ago, that if he come in, rushed in and said, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do, fine with it, then that's a different issue. But, you know, I want the people, obviously, to want to play for us for a start, and I want them to be right for the rest of their time.
Glenn Whelan will captain the side tomorrow night on the occasion of his 85th and it seems final international appearance, but the Aston Villa midfielder wasn't keen to use the word retirement today, however.
Like I said, the retirement thing is you're dead and buried and you're done. Obviously, the manager over the last 12 months or so was trying to bed new lads in, and obviously that's the way Ireland are going, so I'm more than happy for that. I think these lads have waited a long time. They need some game time and to get some caps under the belt. But I think for me now, obviously looking at it, the next couple of years, now if we hopefully do qualify, so I think for me then I'll be 36, 37, so I think that's way off. But I mean retirement as in, I don't know what you do, put it down on paper and not being able to be picked again, I'd never do, but I know tomorrow's probably going to be the last time we play for the country.
I hope he gets a really good send-off. I think he will. It's not to rewrite history and say he was the greatest player ever or anything like that, but he was definitely a lightning rod for a lot of the criticism, which was at times unfair. And he was far better than a lot of pundits gave him credit for.
We had a Premier League level midfielder playing for us for span of a decade, more or less, and we're not afforded such a situation now, so we should be grateful.
Yeah, his one of his children is going to be the mascot, gets to lead out the team, yes. So it's a really nice way to finish your career. Not many get to do it that way. So
people forget how much he battled back to be, because he was at Manchester City and then went off Sheffield Wednesday and then kind of had to reform. He was one of these players that essentially had to reform his idea of how he was going to quote-unquote make it across channel, and very much did so.
There was a great piece in the Mail on Sunday. David Snaid did a profile piece of Whelan and there was lots of little nice bits in it. So at Man City, his nickname was McAngry.
No surprise there.
Big temper, just an angry head in him, McAngry.
Constant chewing gum as well.
Yeah, but there were some tender moments too, because Willow Flood was over at City with him, formerly of Cherry Orchard. Willow Flood, one of the great prospects who went over. And he was talking about how they were in the same digs, you know, he was in the room across mine. And we used to half our money each month to try and get Sky Sports so we could watch all the football.
Ah, stop.
And he said, Glenn taught me how to shave. He's like, it mightn't seem like a big thing, but Glenn taught me how to shave. And there was just something so poignant about the thought of these two Irish lads in probably dingy enough digs in cold, rainy Manchester and trying to figure out the things like, how do you shave? So
perhaps the last of that generation to live that existence probably, as youth players as well.
There was a quote as well from Tony Pulis who said, every summer are we trying to sign someone better than Glenn Whelan. Every summer.
Yeah.
And every summer he fought them off.
It's nice to see him getting some love actually on that point, because when, at his best, he did offer dynamism in the midfield that no one else really did, and he was kind of used in that role when his legs weren't really there anymore, and he was kind of, that was a stick used to beat him with. Mm. Like he was being asked to do something he just couldn't do anymore, so it's nice to see him getting a proper send-off at this stage.
No, it is for sure. So 85th cap and probably his last tomorrow night, so that's Glenn Whelan. On the Obafemi thing, I think this is going to draw criticism. It does demean a cap for me to hand out a cap to someone who's still not even sure if they want to play. I have no issue whatsoever with Declan Rice, Rice, I think, was genuine in how he suddenly had a bit of a change of heart, maybe, if that's how he had it. But I think someone shouldn't really come into camp saying,
to start essentially courting somebody the way they're doing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, I know Obafemi's played underage football for Ireland, but like, if you wanted to compare like for like without wanting to compare apples and oranges, he's playing at the same level as Aaron Connolly at Brighton. And Aaron Connolly at Brighton has been in fantastic form so far this season, scored a hat-trick as recently as this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think has outscored, in terms of ratio, Obafemi like 4-1 in the under-23 Premier League.
Yeah.
And is on the verge of first-team football for Brighton, and probably much closer doing so on a regular basis than Obafemi would at Southampton. Mm. Surely he would be more deserving of a look or a call-up, or at least a training session, rather than somebody who's unsure of what way they want to go forward. By all means, keep contact with Obafemi, but don't so publicly bring him over and be like, and then have to be backtracked into saying, do you know what, I probably won't bring him to Denmark because I don't think he's ready to make that decision yet. Obafemi's totally within his rights to make his decision whenever he sees fit.
Yes.
But for Ireland to kind of play this game just seems a little bit off.
Yeah,
a little bit self-fulfilling as well, because this seemed to be the narrative from the get-go. It's as if they're kind of preempting it a little bit. It's like, maybe let the lad make his own decision without putting ideas in his head.
Yeah. Yeah. How will we all feel if in a couple of months he declares elsewhere and he has a cap for Ireland and others don't. It's a big thing still to win a camp for your country. I'm not sure if it should be handed out as a way of trying to court players, but it seems to be where we are at the moment.
This is our ballroom of international romance, Joe.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Claudio's back.
He is. He's been given the task of helping Fulham survive Premier League relegation after being appointed their new manager. Somewhat surprisingly this morning, Slavisa Jokanović became the first top-flight boss to be sacked this season when his dismissal was confirmed. Jokanović, who coincidentally was Ranieri's first Chelsea signing, leaves with Fulham bottom of the Premier League after gaining promotion in the last campaign. But Ranieri says the key to his tenure will be organisation.
You know, as an Italian manager, for us, the defensive way is the basement of the team. That is important to have a strong vision of the defense way. But it's not only the fullback or the goalkeeper. It's all the team. When you attack, you have to attack in 11. When you defend, you have to defend in 11. Always, I look forward and I want more. And then I hope to make a very good job here.
Claudio's back. Both Gavin Moynihan and Cormac Sharvin, both well placed to retain their cards for next season's European Tour. Both shot rounds of 66 on the penultimate day of Q School at Tarragona today. Moynihan ends today with a share of 15th and Sharvin a share of 32nd. It's the top 25 plus ties at the end of tomorrow's play that'll gain cards for next term. Robin Dawson won't be among them, it's safe to say. The Tremor golfer currently props up the remaining leaderboard with a share of 76th. While a report from French media outlet Mediapart claims that N'Golo Kanté, refused to have money paid to him via an offshore company, the latest Football Leaks piece claims he set up an offshore company but then refused to be paid $1.9 million in image rights to him through that company. A source claims Kanté is, quote, unflinching, he just wants a normal salary. Speaking of the report, an unnamed Chelsea executive allegedly responded by saying, was the person who came up with this on ecstasy?
Sorry, as in, it's so off the wall and mad.
Yeah. But I don't think it is off the wall of my, given what we've read in the Football League's pieces over the course of the last fortnight, that they might use an offshore company to try and funnel funds towards a player or towards an organisation or an agent with the means of avoiding tax on it.
To make it more worth the player's while.
Yeah. Make it worth everybody's while.
So somehow an offshore company allegedly was set up for N'Golo Kanté, but then he refused to have the money paid through the offshore company and said, I just want a normal salary.
Mm. A normal salary of like $250,000 a week.
Sure. A normally taxed salary, I suppose, is the way to put it then.
Fair enough. Okay. Former world number two Agnieszka Rajowanska today announced her retirement from professional tennis. Just aged 29, she made history in 2007, 2 years after turning pro, by becoming the first Polish player to ever win a WTA Tour singles title at the Nordea Nordic Light Open in Sweden. Rajowanska reached the 2012 Wimbledon final, where she lost in three sets to Serena Williams, having won the first set of that match 6-1. She won 20 career singles titles and all most recently at the China Open in October of 2016. While sticking on a tennis tip, Novak Djokovic has all but secured his semi-final berth at the ATP Finals in London. The world number one beat Germany's Alexander Zverev 6-4, 6-1 for his second win in Group A. Later, it's the meeting of the big servers, both winless so far, with Marin Cilic taking on John Isner. And there was disappointment for Dubliner's Kirill Afanasyev in the EU Boxing Championships in Spain. He lost his heavyweight quarterfinal on a unanimous decision to the classy Croat Tony Filippi. Kurt Walker and Michael Nevin will both box for medals in Valladolid tomorrow.
All this week Off the Ball is teaming up with Volkswagen, proud sponsor of Irish rugby. They want to reward Ireland's dedicated rugby fans by giving them the hottest tickets in town. So tonight we're giving you the chance to win an Ireland limited edition series jersey, and you'll go into the end of week draw to win a pair of tickets to Ireland versus New Zealand this Saturday, along with accommodation in Dublin City Centre. To win, just identify our mystery voice, who's still a bit tender after suffering a purple nurple in the locker room recently.
It's going to sting for a little bit here.
For a long time.
It's going to sting for a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, he's been hit with worse.
Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. We'll announce the winner before the end of the show this evening. And remember to drop into the Volkswagen Fan TV Tiguan to Lansdowne Road, ahead of the Autumn International Games all month for your chance to meet a rugby legend, test your rugby knowledge and skills to win some great prizes. For more information, you can follow Volkswagen on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. It's all with thanks to Volkswagen. Proud sponsor of Irish rugby. So, short break. That's our news round for this evening. Next up, Paul O'Connell, Brian O'Driscoll, Alan Quinlan at the Olympia.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.